Advocate Paul Hoffman, he's a director at the Institute for Accountability in Southern Africa. A very good morning. How are you?
Good morning to you, Howard, and to your listeners. I'm very well on this freezing Cape Town morning.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, Cape Town has not been... I had a meeting with somebody yesterday on one of these Zoom calls, and they were sitting there inside in a beanie and a K-way jacket, and I thought, oh, my word, Cape Town.
There's snow. Snow on the mountains.
All right. At least it looks good. Cape Town always looks good, so at least you've got that going for you. All right. A very, very, very difficult week across South Africa. That's probably just a magnificent understatement. And, of course, at times like this, we look to our leadership and we say, do you know what's going on or have you missed it completely? Give me your thoughts.
Well, I listen to the leadership. I hear the Minister of Defense saying that we were caught with our pants down. That's in quotes, not made up.
Did he actually say that? He said that.
She said it, yeah.
She said it.
Was responding to questions about why were the malls so vulnerable? And her answer was, well, we thought that the security guard at the entrance, you know, the one who makes sure that you don't take your dog into the mall, it would be adequate to deal with this, which is indeed being caught with your pants down. I think at least there's an honest response there.
Yeah, I guess.
More useful one comes from the Minister of Police, who maintains that there are 12 people behind the uprising, orchestrating it, organizing it, and directing it. And it seems that Jacob Zuma's private spy, a man called Thulani Dlomo, who was eventually fired from the State Security Agency, and as so often happens in ANC politics, he then pops up again as the ambassador to Japan. Anyway, his loyalty to Zuma knows no bounds, and he is named in various reports as being one of those responsible for coordinating the looting and rioting and destruction of property that has been going on. He doesn't name the remaining 11. But there's a fair amount of speculation in the media that three of Jacob Zuma's children,
the twins,
Edward, Dudu, and Dudu, twins, the right. terrible twins, are involved. And indeed, the Democratic Alliance has laid charges of incitement to violence, which is a crime, against Julius Malema and those twin children of Jacob Zuma. Now, I think you get to the point where it's pretty clear that the faction fighting within the ANC has now boiled over from the back rooms of Luthuli House and the tea parties of Inkandla into the streets of KwaZulu-Natal and parts of Gauteng as well.
It's that African proverb that says when elephants fight, it's the grass that gets damaged. And certainly that is happening. So how is it, if they are so clear on who this is, how do they not anticipate this?
Well, I think the aspiration to become a capable state is still only an aspiration, and what we have is an incapable state. And there's a fair degree of paralysis in our governance as a consequence of the evenness of the fight between the factions of the ANC. You'll recall, if you've got a good memory, that after Cyril Ramaphosa won at NASREC, which was December 2017, so that's quite a long time ago now.
Anything pre-COVID gets confusing.
You know? It was before the Rinderpest, yeah.
Exactly.
So he goes to KwaZulu-Natal and he stands up and in public says to a meeting of the ANC, oh, don't worry about a thing. We will have our party back within 5 years. And what he's talking about is the cycle of meetings that the ANC has for purposes of making policy, for elective conferences, and of course in between times, the National Executive Committee of the ANC is its highest decision-making body, and that National Executive Committee has been pretty evenly divided between supporters of Zuma and supporters of Ramaphosa. In fact, the Zuma faction expected to win at NASREC, but didn't because of a deal that was done at the last minute between Didi Mabuza and Ramaphosa. And Didi Mabuza gave Ramaphosa just enough votes to enable him to win the presidential election within the ANC, which led to him becoming the president after Zuma was forced to resign on Valentine's Day in 2018. So that battle for control of the soul of the ANC, which seems now to have turned into a battle between those loyal to Zuma and those loyal to the rule of law and constitutionalism, that battle is playing itself out in the streets of South Africa, or two provinces of South Africa.
Am I naive to say that this, in the long run, in the longer term, might be a very good thing, in that now it is very, very clear, and you know how things look, and the people of South Africa actually, for the very first time, don't need to speculate about things we have already speculated. We've all kind of known this, but we haven't seen it. Now we know it. Now maybe we can move forward.
Yes, I think that what you are talking about, without saying it, is the prospect of a split the ANC.
Yes.
And that could indeed be a good thing, because dominant party politics in what is set up as a multi-party democracy under the rule of law, in which there is accountability, responsiveness, and openness in governance, that doesn't really happen, because the dominant party is the site at which all the action happens, and the governance of the country under a supreme constitution it plays second fiddle to the dynamics of the factions within the ANC. If this precipitates a neat and big split, not a splinter like we had with COPE, or a splinter like we had with the UDM, or a splinter like Julius Malema and his economic freedom fighters, the most recent splinter in the ANC, but rather a split where, broadly speaking, those who favor the approach, the National Democratic Revolution approach of the Zuma gang, are made to leave the ANC, well, that would be a good day for South Africa. I think you're right.
What about the EFF? Because they're playing a very, very strange role here. As much as they hated Zuma in order to gain popularity whilst he was leader of the country, they now are most definitely showing signs of aligning with him and this type of behavior. Is it possible that we will see the Zuma faction being absorbed into the EFF?
that certainly is a $64,000 question. I was not invited to the Tea Party at Inkanta.
That's disappointing.
When Julius and right. Jacob had a little chat.
Yes, yes.
The fact that the Tea Party happened tells you that there is certainly less of a, at leadership level anyway, less of a vituperative and hateful relationship between them. But I think Julius's problem is that his supporters, his membership, are very anti-Zuma. And with good reason, because Zuma did his best to steal the entire country from the people of South Africa.
Mm. Do you think, I read an article last night from written by Clem Santa, who wrote that to some extent this played out very well, because had the police or the army shown more force, we could have potentially had another Marikana situation, which could have escalated it and caused ultimately complete mayhem. To some extent, the way that it played out is the best way possible. What's your thoughts on that? Is this, was this tactical of a move by Cyril Ramaphosa, or was this Cyril Ramaphosa just being the Hamlet that he is and procrastinating until something happens?
Yes, well, the question is presaged on the assumption that it has played out.
That's
I'm
true.
Not sure that that's correct.
Okay.
Certainly, a capable state is one in which it is possible for the police, guided by the report of the experts who were assembled after, or in terms of the Marikana inquiry. In fact, the recommendation of the inquiry was that the police should take advice from experts, and they produced what is effectively a manual for crowd control, for public order policing. And if the police, which I sometimes wonder about, have taken the recommendations of the Marikana Commission and the content of the report of experts on policing that was put together in the backwash of the Marikana tragedy, then we will indeed have a situation in which crowd control is done with the velvet glove rather than with the iron fist. But, you know, one of the major and urgent recommendations was that the police should be demilitarized. And that has never happened. It's still run as a military or quasi-military force, instead of being what the Constitution requires it to be, which is a service for the people of South Africa. So when you see a policeman, you ought to think of him as your friend, not somebody to run away from avoid or fear. And I know that the Police Portfolio Committee is meeting today, and I do hope that the events of the last week will concentrate some minds there and get the parliamentary committee involved in reforming the police. The problem with the leadership of the police is that they too are involved in factions. Karen Dolly has written a book called To the Wolves, in which she describes what is going on there. This business of cadre deployment in the public administration, including in the police, is undermining the ideas of constitutional democracy under the rule of law, which were embraced by the main players when the new South Africa dawned, but were let go far too quickly in the aftermath. I think the Afrikaner nationalists were never constitutionalists in the sense of having a supreme constitution. And nor were the nationalists among the ANC and the other liberation movements for that matter. So what we have is a constitutional system which envisages the supremacy of the constitution and the rule of law, the centrality of accountability, responsiveness and openness in governance.
Right.
And what we in fact see is a state capture project that very nearly succeeded.
Absolutely.
And now, in the wake of the incarceration of Zuma, we have this